Elite almost screamed as a ghost leopard appeared out of nowhere, twitched its whiskers in Lorkin's direction, and then trotted after the women, its puffy tail swishing behind it. Then the king left, then the Fey males, until only Prince Rowan Whitethorn stood there. He gave Elite a look. Elite immediately shrugged out of Lorkin's grip. Aelin and Adian had stopped ahead, waiting for her, smiling faintly, welcomingly. So Elite headed for them, her court, and did not look back. Rowan had kept quiet during the past few minutes, observing. Lorkin had been willing to die for Elite, had been willing to put aside his quest for Maeve in order for Elite to live, and had then acted territorial enough to make Rowan wonder if he seemed so ridiculous around Aelin all the time. Now alone, Rowan said to Lorkin, "How did you find us?" A cutting smile. "The Dark God nudged me toward here. The Ilken army did the rest." The same Lorkin he'd known for centuries, and yet not. Some hard edge had been dulled. No. Soothed. Lorkin stared toward the source of that soothing, but his jaw clenched as his focus shifted to where Aelin walked beside her. "That power could just as easily destroy her, you know." "I know," Rowan admitted. What she'd done minutes ago, the power she'd summoned and unleashed. It had been a song that had made his magic erupt in kind. When the Ilken's resistance had finally yielded beneath flame and ice and wind, Rowan hadn't been able to stifle the yearning to walk into the burning heart of that power and see her glowing with it. Halfway across the plain, he'd realized it wasn't just the allure of it that tugged at him. It was the woman inside it, who might need physical contact with another living being to remind herself that she had a body and people who loved her, and to pull back from that killing calm that so mercilessly wiped the Ilken from the skies. But then the flames had vanished, their enemies raining down as ash and ice and corpses, and she'd looked at him. Holy gods. When she'd looked at him, he'd almost fallen to his knees. Queen and lover and friend and more. He hadn't cared that they had an audience. He had needed to touch her, to reassure himself that she was all right, to feel the woman who could do such great and terrible things, and still look at him with that beckoning, vibrant life in her eyes. "You make me want to live, Rowan." He wondered if Elite Lochan had somehow made Lorkin want to do the same. He said to Lorkin,
"And what about your mission?"
Any softness vanished from Lorkin's granite-hewn features.
"Why don't you tell me why you're in this shithole place, and then we'll discuss my plans?"
"Aelin can decide what to tell you."
"Such a good dog."
Rowan gave him a lazy smile, but refrained from commenting on the delicate, dark-haired young woman, who now held Lorkin's own leash. Chapter 58 Caltaine Rompier had just turned the tide in this war. Dorian had never been more ashamed of himself. He should have been better, should have seen better. They all should have. The thoughts swirled and eddied as Dorian kept back in the half-drowned temple complex, silently watching as Aelin studied the chest on the altar as if it were an opponent. The queen was now flanked by Lady Elide, Manon on the dark-haired girl's other side, Lysandra sprawled in ghost-leopard form at the queen's feet. The power in that cluster alone was staggering,
and Elide.
Manon had murmured something to Aelin on their walk back into the ruins, about Elide being watched over by Aneth. Watched over, as the rest of them seemed to be by other gods. Lorcan stepped into the ruins, Rowan at his side. Fenris, Gavriel, and Adian approached them, hands on their swords, bodies still thrumming with tension as they kept Lorcan within sight. Especially Maeve's warriors. Another ring of power. Lorcan. Lorcan, blessed by Hellas himself, Rowan had told him on that skiff ride into the Dead Islands. Hellas, god of death, who had traveled here with Aneth, his consort. The hair on Dorian's arms rose. Scions. Each of them touched by a different god. Each of them subtly, quietly guided here. It wasn't a coincidence. It couldn't be. Manon noticed him standing a few feet away, read whatever wariness was on his face, and broke from the circle of quietly talking women to come to his side. What? Dorian clenched his jaw.
I have a bad feeling about this.
He waited for the dismissal. The mockery. Manon only said, Explain. He opened his mouth, but Aelin stepped up to the dais. The lock. The lock that would contain the word keys would allow Aelin to put them back in their gate. Thanks to Caltaine. Thanks to Elide. They only needed one more. Wherever Erewhon had it. But getting this lock... Rowan was instantly at the queen's side as she peered into the chest. Slowly, she looked back at them. At Manon.
Get up here,
the queen said in an unnervingly calm voice. Manon wisely did not refuse.
This isn't the place or time for exploring it,
Rowan said to the queen.
We move it back to the ship. Then figure it out from there.
Aelin murmured her agreement, her face paling. Manon asked them, Was the lock ever here to begin with?
I don't know.
Dorian had never heard Aelin utter the words. It was enough to send him splashing up the stairs, dripping water behind him as he peered in. There was no lock. Not in the way that they had expected. Not in the way the queen had been promised and instructed to find it. The stone chest held only one thing. An iron-bound mirror, the surface near golden with age, speckled and covered in grime. And along the twining, intricately carved border, tucked into the upper right corner, the marking of the eye of Elena. A witch symbol.
What the hell is it?
Adian demanded from the steps below. It was Manon who answered, glancing sidelong at the grim-faced queen.
It's a witch mirror.
A what?
Aelin asked. The others edged closer. Manon tapped a nail on the stone rim of the chest.
When you killed Yellowlegs... Did she give any hint about why she was there? What she wanted from you or the former king?
Dorian searched his own memory, but found nothing.
No.
Aelin glanced to him in question, but Dorian shook his head as well. She asked the witch,
Do you know why she was there?
A hint of a nod. A breath of hesitation. Dorian braced himself. Yellowlegs was there to meet with the king, to show him how her magic mirrors worked.
I smashed most of them,
Aelin said, crossing her arms.
Whatever you destroyed were cheap tricks and replicas, her true witch mirrors. You cannot break those. Not easily, at least.
Dorian had a horrible feeling about where this was headed.
What can they do?
You can see the future, past, present. You can speak between mirrors if someone possesses the sister glass. And then there are the rare silvers, whose forging demands something vital from the maker.
Manon's voice dropped low. Dorian wondered if even among the Blackbeaks, these tales had only been whispered at their campfires.
Other mirrors amplify and hold blasts of raw power, to be unleashed if the mirror is aimed at something. A weapon, Adian said, eliciting a nod from Manon.
The general must have been piecing things together as well, because he asked before Dorian could.
Yellowlegs met with him about those weapons, didn't she?
Manon went silent for long enough that he knew Aelin was about to push. But Dorian gave her a warning stare to keep quiet. So she did. They all did. Finally, the witch said,
"They've been making towers. Enormous, yet capable of being hauled across battlefields, lined with those mirrors. For Erewhon to use with his powers to incinerate your armies in a few blasts."
Aelin closed her eyes. Rowan laid a hand on her shoulder. Dorian asked,
"Is this?"
He gestured to the chest, the mirror inside. "One of the mirrors they plan to use?"
"No," Manon said, studying the witch mirror within the chest. "Whatever this mirror is, I'm not sure what it was meant for, what it can even do. But it surely isn't that lock you sought."
Aelin fished the eye of Elena from her pocket, weighing it in her hand, and loosed a sharp sigh through her nose. "I'm ready for today to be over." Mile after mile, the Fey males carried the mirror between them. Rowan and Adian pushed Manon for details on those witch towers. Two were already constructed, but she didn't know how many more were being built. They were stationed in the Farian Gap, but with others possibly elsewhere. No, she didn't know the mode of transportation, or how many witches to a tower. Aelin let their words settle into some deep, quiet part of her. She'd figure it out tomorrow, after she slept. Figure out this damn witch mirror tomorrow, too. Her magic was exhausted. For the first time in days, that pit of magic now slumbered. She could sleep for a week, a month. Each step across the marshes, back toward where those three ships would be waiting, was an effort. Lysandra frequently offered to shift into a horse and carry her, but Aelin refused. The shifter was drained as well. They all were. She wanted to talk to Elide, wanted to ask about so many things regarding those years apart. But the exhaustion that nagged at her rendered speech nearly impossible. She knew what kind of sleep beckoned, the deep restorative slumber that her body demanded after too much magic had been spent, after she'd held on to it for too long. So Aelin hardly spoke to Elide, leaving the lady to lean on Lorcan as they hurried to the coast, as they hauled the mirror with them. Too many secrets. There were still too many secrets with Elena and Brannan and their long-ago war. Had the lock ever existed, or was the witch mirror the lock? Too many questions with too few answers. She'd figure it out. Once they were back to safety. Once she had a chance to sleep. Once, everything else fell into place too. So they trudged through the marshes without rest. It was Lysandra who picked up on it with that leopard's senses. Half a mile from the white sand beach and the calm gray sea beyond, a wall of grassy sand dunes blocking the view ahead.
They all had weapons drawn as they scrambled up the dune, sand slipping from beneath them. Rowan didn't shift, the only proof he'd shown of his utter exhaustion. He made it up the hill first, drew his sword from across his back. Aelin's breath burned her throat as she halted beside him, Gabriel and Fenris gently setting down the mirror on her other side. Because 100 gray sails stretched ahead, surrounding their own ships. They spread toward the western horizon, utterly silent save for the men they could barely make out on board. Ships from the west. From the Gulf of Oro. Melisande's fleet. And on the beach, waiting for them, a party of 20 warriors, led by a gray-cloaked woman. Lysandra's claws slipped free of their sheaths as she let out a low snarl. Lorcan shoved a lead behind him.
"We retreat into the marshes," he said to Rowan, whose face was set in stone as he sized up the party on the beach, the looming fleet. "We can outrun them."
Aelin slid her hands into her pockets. "They're not going to attack." Lorcan sneered.
"You're guessing this based on your many years of experience in war?"
"Watch it," Rowan snarled.
"This is absurd,"
Lorcan spat, twisting away, as if he'd grab a lead, pale-faced at his side.
"Our reservoirs are drained."
Lorcan was halted from hauling a lead over his shoulder by a paper-thin wall of fire, about as much as Aelin could summon. And by Manon and her iron nails stepping before him, as she growled,
"You're not taking a lead anywhere. Not now, and not ever."
Lorcan rose to his full height, and before they could wreck everything with their brawling, Aelin laid a delicate hand on Lorcan's arm, his own hand wrapped around the hilt of his sword.
"I choose this, Manon."
Manon only glanced at the hand on Lorcan's arm.
"We'll discuss this later."
"Indeed." Aelin looked Lorcan over and jerked her chin. "Go brood somewhere else." The cloaked woman on the beach, along with her soldiers, was now striding toward them. Lorcan growled,
"It's not over, this business between us."
Aelin smiled a bit. "You think I don't know that?" But Lorcan prowled to Rowan, his dark power flickering, rippling away across the waves as if in a silent boom of thunder, taking up a defensive position. Aelin looked to her stone-faced prince, then to Adian, her cousin's sword and shield angled and at the ready, then the others. "Let's go say hello." Rowan started.
"Aelin."
But she was already striding down the dune, doing her best to keep from sliding on the treacherous sand, to keep her head high. The others trailing behind were taut as bowstrings, but their breathing remained even, primed for anything. The soldiers were in heavy, worn gray armor, their faces rough and scarred, sizing them up as they hit the sand. Fenris snarled at one of them, and the man averted his eyes. But the cloaked woman removed her hood as she approached with feline grace, halting perhaps 10 feet away. Aelin knew every detail about her. Knew that she was 20 years old now. Knew that the medium-length wine-red hair was her real hair color. Knew the red-brown eyes were the only she'd seen in any land, on any adventure. Knew the wolf's head on the pommel of the mighty sword at her side was her family's crest. Knew the smattering of freckles, the full laughing mouth. Knew the deceptively slim arms that hid rock-hard muscle as she crossed them. That full mouth slanted into a half-grin, as Ansel of Briarcliff, Queen of the Wastes, drawled. "Who gave you permission to use my name in pit fights, Aelin?" "I gave myself permission to use your name however I please, Ansel,"
The day I spared your life, instead of ending you like the coward you are. That cocky smile widened.
Hello, bitch, Ansel purred.
Hello, traitor, Aelin purred right back, surveying the armada spread before them. Looks like you made it on time after all.
Chapter 59
Aelin felt the utter shock of her companions ripple from them, as Ansel bowed dramatically, gesturing to the ships behind them, and said,
As requested, your fleet.
Aelin snorted. Your soldiers look like they've seen better days.
Oh, they always look like that. I've tried and tried to get them to focus on outside appearances as much as improving their inner beauty, but you know how men are.
Aelin chuckled, even as she sensed her companion's shock turning into something red hot. Manon stepped forward, the sea breeze whipping strands of her white hair over her face, and said to Aelin,
Melisande's fleet bows to Morath. You might as well be signing an alliance with Erewhon, too, if you're working with this person.
Ansel's face drained of color at the iron teeth, the nails. And Aelin remembered the story the assassin-turned-queen had once told her. Whispered atop rolling desert sands and beneath a carpet of stars. A childhood friend, eaten alive by an iron-teeth witch. Then Ansel herself, after the slaughter of her family, had been spared when she'd stumbled into an iron-teeth witch's camp. Aelin said to Manon,
She is not from Melisande. The Wastes are allied with Terrasen.
Adian started, now sizing up the ships, the woman before them. Manon Blackbeak said in a voice like death,
Who is she? To speak for the Wastes.
Oh, gods above.
Aelin schooled her face into bland irreverence and gestured between the two women. Manon Blackbeak, heir to the Blackbeak Witch Clan and now the last Kraken Queen, meet Ansel of Briarcliff, assassin and queen of the Western Wastes.
Roaring filled Manon's head as they rowed back to their ship. Interrupted only by the splashing of the oars through the calm waves. She was going to kill the red-haired bitch. Slowly. They remained silent until they reached the towering ship, then climbed its side. No sign of Abraxos. Manon scanned the skies, the fleet, the seas. Not a scale to be found. The rage in her gut twisted into something else, something worse, and she took a step for the ruddy-faced captain to demand answers. But Aelin casually stepped in her path, giving her an adder's smile, as she glanced between Manon and the red-haired young woman who now leaned against the stairpost. You two should have a little chat later. Manon stormed around her.
Ansel of Briarcliff does not speak for the Wastes.
Where was Abraxos? But you do. And Manon had to wonder if she'd somehow become tangled in whatever plans the queen had woven. Especially as Manon found herself forced to halt again, forced to turn back to the smirking queen and say,
Yes, I do.
Even Rowan blinked at Manon Blackbeak's tone. The voice that was not witch or warrior or predator.
Queen.
The last Kraken Queen. Rowan sized up the potentially explosive fight brewing between Ansel of Briarcliff and Manon Blackbeak. He remembered all that Aelin had told him of Ansel. The betrayal while the two women had trained in the desert. The fight to the death that had left Aelin sparing the red-haired woman. A life debt. Aelin had called in the life debt owed to her. Ansel, with a swaggering arrogance that completely explained why she and Aelin had become fast friends,
drawled to Manon from where she had perched on the quarterdeck stairs. Well, last I heard, neither Kraken nor Iron Teeth witches bothered to look after the wastes. I suppose that as someone who has fed and guarded its people these past 2 years, I do get to speak for them and decide who we help and how we do it. Ansel smirked at Aelin like the witch wasn't staring at her throat as if she'd rip it out with her iron teeth. You and I live next door to each other, after all. It'd be unneighborly of me not to help.
Explain, Adian said tightly, his heartbeat thundering loud enough for Rowan to hear.
The first word the general had uttered since Ansel had pulled back her hood, since Aelin's little surprise had been waiting for them on the beach. Ansel angled her head, the silky red hair catching the light, looking, Rowan realized, like the richest red wine, exactly as Aelin had once described it.
Well, months ago, I was minding my own business in the wastes when I got a message out of the blue from Aelin.
She sent me a message loud and clear from Rifthold. Pit fighting, she chuckled, shaking her head.
And I knew to get ready, to move my army to the edge of the Annaschool Mountains.
Adian's breathing snagged. Only centuries of training kept Rowan's from doing the same. His cadre remained stalwart behind them all, positions they'd taken hundreds of times over the centuries, ready for bloodshed or to fight their way out of it. Ansel smiled, a winning grin.
Half of them are on their way there now, ready to join with Terrasen, the country of my friend Selena Sardothian, who did not forget, even when she was in the Red Desert, and who did not stop looking north every night that we could see the stars. There was no greater gift I could offer to repay her than saving the kingdom she did not forget. And that was before I got her letter months ago, telling me who she was and that she'd gut me if I didn't assist in her cause. I was on my way with my army already, but then the next letter arrived, telling me to go to the Gulf of Oro, to meet her here and follow a specific set of instructions.
Adian snapped his head to Aelin, saltwater still gleaming on his tan face from the boat over.
The dispatches from Ilium?
Aelin waved a lazy hand to Ansel.
Let the woman finish.
Ansel strolled to Aelin and linked her arm through her elbow. She smirked like a fiend.
I'm assuming you lot know how bossy Her Majesty is, but I followed the instructions. I brought the other half of my army when I veered down south, and we hiked through the White Fangs and into Melisande. Its queen assumed we arrived to offer aid. She let us right in the front gates.
Rowan held his breath. Ansel let out a sharp whistle, and on the nearest ship, clopping and nickering sounded. And then an Asterion horse emerged from the stables. The horse was a storm made flesh. Rowan couldn't remember the last time he'd seen Aelin beam with pure delight, as she breathed,
Cassita. Do you know, Ansel went on, that I rather enjoy pillaging. With Melisande's troops spread so thin for Morath, she really had no choice but to yield. Though she was particularly furious to see me claim the horse, made worse when I took her out of her dungeon to reveal that Terrasen's flag now flies alongside my wolf at her own damn house.
What?
Adian blurted. Aelin and Ansel faced them, brows high. Dorian staggered forward a step at Ansel's words, and the Queen of the Wastes gave him a look that said she'd like to pillage him. Ansel gestured to the ships around them with a broad sweep of her arm.
Melisande's fleet is now our fleet, and its capital is now ours, too.
She jerked her chin at Aelin.
You're welcome.
Manon Blackbeak burst out laughing. Adian didn't know who to be more furious with. Aelin, for not telling him about Ansel of Briarcliff, and the gods-damned army she'd quietly ordered to sack Melisande and seize its fleet. Or himself,
for not trusting her, for demanding where their allies were, for implying all that he had in those moments before the Ilken attack. She'd just taken it. As Ansel's words sank into the company still gathered on the main deck, his cousin said quietly, "Melisande meant to assist Morath in cleaving the north and south. I did not take its city for glory or conquest, but I will not allow anything to come between me and defeating Morath. Melisande will now clearly understand the cost of allying with Erewhon." He tried not to bristle. He was her general prince. Rowan was her consort, or close enough to it. And yet she had not entrusted them with this. He hadn't even contemplated the Wastes as an ally. Perhaps that was why. He would have told her not to bother. Adian said to Ansel, "Melisande has likely already sent word to Morath. Its own armies are no doubt rushing back to the capital city. Get your remaining men across the Fangs again. We can lead the armada from here." Ansel looked to Aelin, who nodded her agreement. The Queen of the Wastes then asked him, "And then march north to Terrasen and cross at the Annaschool Passes?" Adian gave a single nod of confirmation, already calculating where he'd place her men, who in the Bane he'd give command over them. Without seeing Ansel's men fight, Adian began heading toward the stairs to the quarterdeck, not bothering to wait for permission. But Aelin halted him with a cleared throat. "Talk to Ansel before she leaves tomorrow morning, about where to bring her army once it's whole again." He merely nodded, and continued up the steps, ignoring his father's concerned look as he went. The others eventually split up, and Adian didn't care where they went, only that he had a few minutes to himself. He leaned against the rail, peering into the sea lapping against the side of the ship, trying not to notice the men on the surrounding ships sizing up him and his companions. Some of their whispers hit him from across the water. "The Wolf of the North, General Ash River." Some began to tell stories, most outright lies, a few close enough to the truth. Adian let the sound of them bleed into the plunk and hiss of the waves. Her ever-changing scent hit him, and something in his chest loosened. Loosened a bit further at the sight of her slim golden arms, as she braced them on the rail beside his own. Lysandra glanced over her shoulder to where the witch and Elide, gods above, Elide, had gone to sit by the foremast, talking quietly, probably recounting their own adventures since parting ways. The armada wouldn't sail until morning, he'd overheard the captain saying. He doubted it had anything to do with Aelin waiting to see if the wing leader's missing mount would return.
"We shouldn't linger," Adian said, now scanning the northern horizon.
The Ilken had come from that direction, and if they had found them so easily, even with an armada now around them.
"We're carrying two keys and the lock, or whatever the hell that witch mirror actually is. The tide's with us. We should go."
Lysandra shot him a sharp look.
"Go take it up with Aelin."
Adian studied her from head to toe. "What's chewing on you?" She'd been distant for the past few days, but now he could practically see that courtesan's mask snap into place, as she seemed to will her eyes to brighten, her frowning mouth to soften.
"Nothing, I'm just tired."
Something about the way she glanced toward the sea rubbed at him. Adian said carefully,
"We've been battling our way across this continent. Even after 10 years of this, it still drains me. Not just physically, but in my heart."
Lysandra ran a finger down the smooth wood of the railing.
"I thought it all seemed a grand adventure.
Even when the danger was so horrible, it was still new, and I was no longer caged in dresses and bedrooms. But that day in Skull's Bay, it stopped being any of that. It started being survival, and some of us might not make it. Her mouth wobbled a bit. I never had friends, not as I do now. And today on that beach, when I saw that fleet and thought it belonged to our enemy, for a moment, I wished I'd never met any of you. Because the thought of any of you...
She sucked in a breath.
How do you do it? How have you learned to enter a battlefield with your bane and not fall apart with the terror that not all of you might walk off it?
Adian listened to every word, assessed every shaking breath, and he said plainly,
You have no choice but to learn to face it.
He wished she didn't need to think of such things, have such weight on her.
The fear of loss. It can destroy you as much as the loss itself.
Lysandra at last met his gaze. Those green eyes. The sadness in them hit him like a blow to the gut. It was an effort not to reach for her. But she said,
I think we will both need to remind ourselves of that in the times ahead.
He nodded, sighing through his nose.
And remember to enjoy what time we do have.
She'd likely learned that as many times as he had. Her slender, lovely throat bobbed, and she glanced sidelong at him beneath lowered lashes.
I do enjoy it, you know. This... whatever this is.
His heart ratcheted to a thunderous beat. Adian debated whether or not to go for subtlety, and gave himself the span of 3 breaths to decide. In the end, he went for his usual method, which had served him well both on and off battlefields. A precise sort of blunt attack, edged with enough outright arrogance to throw his opponents off their guard.
Whatever this is, he said with a half-smile. Between us.
Lysandra indeed went on the defensive, and showed her hand.
I know my history is unappealing.
I'm going to stop you right there, Adian said, daring a step closer. And I'm going to tell you that there is nothing unappealing about you. Nothing. I've been with just as many people. Women, men, I've seen and tried it all.
Her brows had risen. Adian shrugged. I find pleasure in both, depending on my mood and the person. One of his former lovers still remained one of his closest friends, and most skilled commanders in his bane.
Attraction is attraction.
He steeled his nerve.
And I know enough about it to understand what you and I...
Something shuddered in her eyes, and the words slipped from him. Too soon. Too soon for this sort of talk.
We can figure it out. Make no demands of each other beyond honesty.
That was really the only thing he cared to request. It was nothing more than he'd ask of a friend. A small smile played about her lips.
Yes,
she breathed.
Let's start there.
He dared another step closer, not caring who watched on the deck, or in the rigging, or in the armada around them. Color bloomed high on those beautiful cheekbones, and it was an effort not to stroke a finger across them, then his mouth, to taste her skin. But he'd take his time, enjoy every moment, as he had told her to do. Because this would be his last hunt. He had no intention of wasting each glorious moment in one go, of wasting any of the moments that fate had granted him, and all he wanted to show her, every stream and forest and sea in Terrasen. To see Lysandra laugh her way through the autumnal circle dances, to weave ribbons around the maypoles in the spring, and listen, wide-eyed, to ancient tales of war and ghosts before the roaring winter fires in the mountain halls. All of it. He'd show her all of it, and walk onto those battlefields again and again to ensure he could. So Adian smiled at Lysandra and brushed her hand with his own.
I'm glad we're in agreement. For once.
Chapter 60. Aelin and Ansel clinked bottles of wine over the long, scarred table in the galley, and drank deeply. They were to sail at first light tomorrow. North. Back north. To Terrasen. Aelin braced her forearms on the slick table. Here's to dramatic entrances. Lysandra, curled on the bench in ghost leopard form with her head on Aelin's lap, let out a little feline laugh. Ansel blinked in wonder. So, what now?
It'd be nice, Adian grumbled from down the table,
where he and Rowan glared at them.
To be included in just one of these schemes, Aelin?
But your faces are so wonderful when I get to reveal them, Aelin crooned. He and Rowan growled. Oh, she knew they were pissed. So pissed that she hadn't told them about Ansel. But the thought of disappointing them, of failing. She'd wanted to do this on her own. Rowan, apparently, mastered his annoyance enough to ask Ansel,
Were the Ilken or Volg not in Melisande?
Are you implying my forces weren't good enough to take the city if they had been? Ansel swigged from her wine, laughter dancing in her eyes. Dorian sat at the table between Fenris and Gavriel, the three of them wisely keeping quiet. Lorcan and Elid were on the deck, somewhere. No, Prince, Ansel went on. I asked the Queen of Melisande about the lack of Morath-bred horrors, and after some coaxing, she informed me that through whatever wiles and scheming, she managed to keep Erewhon's claws from her. And her soldiers. Aelin straightened a bit, wishing she'd had more wine than the third of a bottle she'd already consumed, as Ansel added, When this war is over, Melisande will not have the excuse of being enthralled to Erewhon or the Volg. Everything she and her armies have done, their choice in allying with him, was a human choice. A pointed glance to the darkest part of the galley, where Manon Blackbeak sat alone. At least Melisande will have the iron teeth to commiserate with. Manon's iron teeth flashed in the dim light. Her wyvern hadn't been spotted or heard from since he'd left, apparently. And she and Elid had talked for over an hour on the deck this afternoon. Aelin decided to do them all a favor and cut in. I need more men, Ansel, and I do not have the ability to be in so many places at once. They were all watching now. Ansel set down the bottle. You want me to raise another army for you? I want you to find me the lost Kraken witches. Manon jerked upright. What? Aelin scratched at a mark on the table. They are in hiding, but they're still out there, if the Iron Teeth hunt them. They might have significant numbers. Promise to share the wastes with them. You control Briarcliff and half the coast. Give them inland and the south. Manon was prowling over, death in her eyes. You do not have the right to promise such things. Rowan's and Adian's hands shot to their swords. But Lysandra opened a sleepy eye, stretched out a paw on the bench, and revealed the needle-sharp claws that now stood between Manon's shins and Aelin. Aelin said to Manon,
You cannot hold the land, not with the curse. Ansel won it through blood and loss and her own wits.
It is my home. My people's home.
That was the asking price, wasn't it? The Iron Teeth get their homeland returned, and Erewhon probably promised to break the curse. At Manon's wide eyes, Aelin snorted.
Oh, the ancients didn't tell you that, did they? Too bad. That's what Ansel's spies picked up.
She looked the wingleader over.
If you and your people prove to be better than your matrons, there will be a place for you in that land, too.
Manon just stalked back to her seat and glared at the galley's small brazier as if she could freeze it over. Ansel murmured,
"So touchy, these witches."
Aelin clamped her lips together, but Lysandra let out another breathy cat laugh. Manon's nails clicked against each other from across the room. Lysandra merely answered with her own. Aelin said to Ansel,
"Find the Krokins."
"They're all gone," Manon cut in again. "We've hunted them to near extinction."
Aelin slowly looked over a shoulder.
"What if their queen summoned them?"
"I am no more their queen than you are."
"They'd see about that." Aelin laid a hand flat on the table. "Send anything and anyone you find north," she said to Ansel. "Sacking Melisande's capital on the sly will at least piss off Erewhon, but we don't want to be stuck down here when Terrasen is attacked."
"I think Erewhon was probably born pissed."
Only Ansel, who had once laughed at death as she'd leaped a ravine and convinced Aelin to nearly die doing the same, would mock a Volg king. But Ansel added,
"I'll do it. I don't know how effective it'll be, but I have to go north anyway.
Though, I think Hisley will be heartbroken to say farewell to Cassita once again."
It was no surprise at all that Ansel had managed to hold on to Hisley, the Asterion mare she'd stolen for herself. But Cassita. Oh, Cassita was just as beautiful as Aelin remembered, even more so, once she'd been led over a gangway onto the ship. Aelin had brushed the mare down when she led her into the cramped, wet stables, and bribed the horse to forgive her with an apple. Ansel slugged from the bottle.
"I heard, you know, when you went to Endovir. I was still fighting my way onto the throne, battling Lord Locke's horde with the lords I'd banded together, but even out in the wastes, we heard when you were sent there."
Aelin picked at the table some more, well aware the others were listening.
"It wasn't fun."
Ansel nodded.
"Once I'd killed Locke, I had to stay to defend my throne to make it right again for my people. But I knew if anyone could survive Endovir, it'd be you. I set out last summer. I'd reached the Rune Mountains when I got word you were gone, taken to the capital by..."
She glanced at Dorian, stone-faced across the table.
"Him. But I couldn't go to Rifthold. It was too far, and I had been gone too long. So I turned around, went home."
Aelin's words were strangled.
"You tried to get me out?"
The fire cast Ansel's hair in ruby and gold. "There was not one hour that I did not think about what I did in the desert.
How you fired that arrow after 21 minutes. You told me 20. That you'd shoot even if I wasn't out of range. I was counting. I knew how many it had been. You gave me an extra minute."
Lysandra stretched out, nuzzling Ansel's hand. She idly scratched the shifter. Aelin said,
"You were my mirror.
That extra minute was as much for me as it was for you."
Aelin clinked her bottle against Ansel's again.
"Thank you."
Ansel just said,
"Don't thank me yet."
Aelin straightened. The others halted their eating, utensils discarded in their stew.
The fires along the coast weren't set by Erewhon, Ansel said, those red-brown eyes flickering in the lantern light.
We interrogated Melisande's queen and her lieutenants, but it wasn't an order from Morath.
Adian's low growl told her they all knew the answer, before Ansel replied.
We got a report that Fae soldiers were spied starting them, firing from ships.
Maeve,
Gabriel murmured.
But burning isn't her style.
It's mine, Aelin said. They all looked at her. She let out a humorless laugh. Ansel just nodded.
She's been setting them, blaming you for it.
To what end?
Dorian asked, dragging a hand through his blue-black hair.
To undermine Aelin, Rowan said, to make her look like a tyrant, not a savior, like a threat worth banding against, rather than allying with.
Aelin sucked on a tooth.
Maeve plays the game well, I'll give her that.
So she's reached these shores, then, Adian said. But where the hell is she?
A stone of fear plunked into Aelin's stomach. She couldn't bring herself to say north. To suggest that perhaps Maeve now sailed for undefended Terrasen. A glance at Fenris and Gavriel revealed them already shaking their heads in silent answer to Rowan's pointed look. Aelin said,
We leave at first light.
In the dim light of their private cabin an hour later, Rowan drew a line across the map spread in the center of the floor, then a second line beside it, then a third beside that. Three lines, roughly spaced apart, broad swaths of the continent between. Aelin, standing beside him, studied them. Rowan drew an inward arrow from the leftmost line toward the one in the center, and said quietly so the others in the adjacent rooms or hall couldn't hear.
Ansel and her army hammer from the western mountains.
Another arrow in an opposite direction, toward the line on the far right.
Rolf, the Mycenaeans, and this armada strike from the eastern coast.
An arrow pointing down into the right section of his little drawing, where the two arrows would meet.
The Bane and the other half of Ansel's army sweep down the center, from the Staghorns to the heart of the continent, all converging on Morath. Those eyes were like green fire. You've been moving armies into position.
I need more, she said, and I need more time.
His brows narrowed.
And what army will you be fighting in?
His mouth twitched up at a corner.
I assume I won't be able to persuade you to stay behind the lines.
You know better than to even try.
Where would the fun be, anyway? If I got to win all the glory while you sat on your ass, I'd never let you hear the end of it.
She snorted, and surveyed the other maps they'd spread across the floor of their cabin. Together they formed a patchwork of their world, not just the continent, but the lands beyond. She stood, towering over it, as if she could spy those armies, both near and far. Rowan, still kneeling, looked upon the world spread at her feet. And she realized it indeed was, if she won this war, won the continent back. Aelin scanned the sprawl of the world, which had once seemed so vast, and now at her feet seemed so fragile, so small and breakable.
You could, you know,
Rowan said, his tattoo stark in the lantern light.
Take it for yourself. Take it all. Use Maeve's bullshit maneuvers against her. Make good on that promise.
There was no judgment, only frank calculation and contemplation. And would you join me if I did?
if I turned conqueror?
You would unify, not pillage and burn. And yes, to whatever end.
That's the threat, isn't it? She mused. The other kingdoms and territories will spend the rest of their existence wondering if I will one day grow restless in Terrasen. They will do their best to ensure we stay happily within our borders, and find them to be more useful as allies and trade partners than potential conquests. Maeve attacked Ilway's coast, posing as me, perhaps to turn those foreign lands against me, to hammer home the point I made with my power at Skull's Bay, and use it against us. He nodded.
But if you could, would you?
For a heartbeat, she could see it. See her face carved into statues in kingdoms so far away they did not even know Terrasen existed. A living god. Mala's heir and conqueror of the known world. She would bring music and books and culture, wipe out the corruption festering in corners of the earth. She said softly, "Not now."
"But later?"
"Perhaps if being queen bores me, I'll think about making myself empress, to give my offspring not one kingdom to inherit, but as many as the stars." There was no harm in saying it, anyway, in thinking about it, stupid and useless as it was, even if wondering about the possibilities. Perhaps it made her no better than Maeve or Erewhon. Rowan jerked his chin toward the nearest map, toward the wastes.
"Why did you forgive Ansel, after what she did to you and the others in the desert?"
Aelin crouched again. "Because she made a bad choice, trying to heal a wound she could never mend, trying to avenge the people she loved."
"And you really set all this in motion when we were in Rifthold? When you were fighting in those pits?"
She gave him a roguish wink. "I knew if I gave the name Ansel of Briarcliff, it'd somehow make its way to her that a red-haired young woman was using her name to slaughter trained soldiers in the pits, and that she'd know it was me."
"So the red hair back then. Not just for Aerobin."
"Not even close." Aelin frowned at the maps, dissatisfied she hadn't spotted any other armies hiding out around the world. Rowan dragged a hand through his hair.
"Sometimes I wish I knew every thought in that head, each scheme and plot. Then I remember how much it delights me when you reveal it, usually when it's most likely to make my heart stop dead in my chest."
"I knew you were a sadist." He kissed her mouth once, twice, then the tip of her nose, nipping it with his canines. She hissed and batted him away, and his deep chuckle rumbled against the wooden walls.
"That's for not telling me," he said. "Again."
But despite his words, despite everything, he looked so happy. So perfectly content and happy to be there, kneeling among those maps, the lantern down to its last dregs, the world going to hell. The joyless cold male she'd first met, the one who had been waiting for an opponent good enough to bring him death. He now looked at her with happiness in his face. She took his hand, gripping it hard.
"Rowan."
The spark died from his eyes. She squeezed his fingers.
"Rowan, I need you to do something for me."
Manon lay curled on her side in her narrow bed, unable to sleep. It was not from the piss-poor sleeping conditions. No, she'd slept in far worse, even considering the shoddily patched hole in the side of the wall. She stared at that gap in the wall, at the moonlight leaking in on the salty summer breeze. She would not go find the Krokins,
no matter what the Terrasen Queen called her. Admitting to her bloodline was different from...